that you're born an Italian. If you want your life to be great, see that you're born an Italiano and your life will be great.
Hey there, Paisani. Welcome back to another episode of the Italian-American Podcast. I'm John Viola, spending the day on a topic near and dear to the heart of my partner in crime, the notorious P.O.B., because, as everybody knows, he's the Wikipedia of Italian-America, the Wikipedia, if you will. I think it's been well established on this.
That sounds like patty cakes.
I kind of like it,
the
though.
The kids do, but do they do that anymore?
Like, no way. Cake?
Is that gone?
No way. Patty cake's got to be gone.
Patty cake. Patty
that was the name of the store in my neighborhood that sold ice cream and candy, patty cakes. And then the building collapsed.
Does anybody know if that's gone?
Oh, it's got to be gone.
Remember Red Rover?
Sure, all that stuff.
That's all gone. I mean, I never played that. I watched. You have to run and break the line. And
so, you know, we moved like down the block from my brother, right? That was my big Italian-American relocation dream. And so we've been with them pretty much every day, right? So my nephew, who's 6 and a half in first grade, he's been teaching me this game they play called Gaga Ball. And I mean, a 6 and a half-year-old's teaching me the rules.
Is that name for the lady?
No, I don't think so. I don't know, maybe. It's definitely new. And so he's explaining to me they play in this pit. And I'm picturing the scene with, like, the bear baiting in Game of Thrones. I'm like, I don't understand this. I got to, like, look it up. So after 3 days of playing what I think are rudimentary rules, Gaga Ball, my nephew, in the driveway, I looked this thing up. And you're going to go off the wall on this. It's basically a sweeter version of dodgeball. It's a reinterpretation of dodgeball. So you don't throw balls at each other. You tap them at each other's legs. And you only aim for the knee to the foot. And so it's like a.
Where are we going as a society?
This is like a, right? It's like a nanny state version of dodgeball.
Nanny state version. Yeah, that definitely. PBS probably. There was probably a.
And they love this game.
They're probably on Sesame Street. If that's still even around.
Yeah, Sesame Street. It's on HBO
now. What do
they
call it? Gaga Ball?
Gaga Ball, yeah. If you're out there and your kids play Gaga Ball, teach them dodgeball.
We're done. That's why we better all start learning Chinese and Russian. We're going to defend ourselves with Gaga balls, Gaga missiles. I'm sorry. But I never knew a kid who saw dodgeball as an act of violence.
No, I mean.
I never in my life. Now, believe me, I was the most unathletic child that God has ever put on the earth. So I am in no way. But I never heard a kid say, like, she hit me, he hit me in dodgeball.
No.
I never saw that as the tactile aspect of that sport. As anyone saying that it was violence, so how are they gonna? What's gonna happen with football?
Football's gone.
They gotta go after football. The liability football's finished. They'll be fine.
Absolutely, here. Yeah. I mean, we used to play on the school playground on which was a parking lot, right? So we had one nun, Sister Mary Catherine, watching us with the bell. I don't know how she watched hundreds of kids at once, but.
Because she was a nun. They went to school for that.
That's true. Eyes everywhere.
Like radar. Yeah, that's true. That was part of, like, the sign-up.
Yeah,
they
true.
Got that, yeah.
Yeah, and we would pretend to professional wrestle. We'd be throwing each other off of concrete. Like,
what would have happened if professional wrestling was going to be the next thing about? I never met a sport that Italian-Americans were more enthusiastic about than professional wrestling.
Yeah, we got a big following of professional wrestling.
Haystacks Calhoun.
Yeah. Well, Bruno Sammartino.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you know, 30, whatever he was, 25 years, he was a world champion from Abruzzo. I mean,
that's definitely a podcast episode. Italian Americans and professionals.
That's very true. You know, it's a lot of them. Yeah, Hulk Hogan, Macho Man, they're all Italian American. All of them.
Because they're all actors.
That's
they're
absolutely
probably
right.
All Neapolitans. They're all actors. Right.
That's right. Very true. But, you know, I'm thinking about all this, right, Gaga Ball and all this sort of, like, baby-proofing of society. And as I was saying in the introduction, you know, you're a college professor. I know that's your passion. And I think now this podcast is your co-equal.
It's the biggest classroom I ever got.
Yeah.
But the concept is the same.
Yeah. But you have a second career that, you know, most people work very, very long and hard for. And it gets sort of lost under the professional Italian-American professor role. But, you know, you're also a lawyer, right?
Because law school allowed me to wear doctoral robes at graduation.
It's really about the costuming.
That's why you go to, it's all about the costume. That's an Italian mentality.
But you practice.
Yeah, I been there, done that. But the greatest part of the legal career is that you get the hat with the tassel at graduation. And you get all the bars. So people spend 30 years on a PhD. 3 years in law school, JD, you're in, you're out. That's just my take on stuff. And you could put SY on everything.
So this is what
everybody
for you is titles,
takes that
robes.
Yeah, of course. I'm not going to lie. What am I going to get up here and lie and say that's not true? No, John, that's not me. I would love to somehow module the ability to wear an Italian lawyer's outfit.
We'll get you there.
Because in Italy, they got to wear the robes. But I want to be allowed to do it legally. I don't want to just be Halloween. There's got to be some court in Italy that's going to allow me. That's why I even would like a canonical degree. Because then I could go in front of the Rota in Rome. And they got even better outfits. They got red hats and pom-poms.
That's a great idea.
But I would love... Canada even still has the outfit.
Oh, sure. Of course. Yeah.
I want to get into somewhere where I can wear the outfit. And I would like the big white wig.
Yeah, you'd be great with that. Yeah.
Wouldn't that be like awesome? Because you get to wear like, was it not morning suit? They wear those white bibby ties underneath.
They wear the whole thing.
Yeah. I love that. Here, you have to worry about like combing your hair as you're losing it. It's receding. You got the white wig. That's what I like. And Esquire. You know why? Because everyone assumes when you're a lawyer that you know things you really don't know.
That's probably true.
People ask you like how many pints are in a cup and kind of like how would I know that? Well, I thought, you know. That's a true story. Someone asked me one time. It was some whacked out question like that. And they're like, well, you're a lawyer. I was like, okay, well, I don't know. That sounds nice.
But, you know, you think about, though, like we live in a society that is particularly litigious right now. I mean, you know, that's no shock to anybody, right?
All fun aside, law school teaches you how to think and reason. That's the benefit of it. I mean, you know, you have fun on here. People talk about the legal profession like an ex-wife, like, you know, it's too late now type thing. But I think everyone should go to law school because it changes the way you read, you write, you think.
In a society that's particularly litigious, I think it's like buying the board game, and law school is where they give you the rule book, right? That's how I kind of see it. I have not gone to law school.
The best part about being a lawyer is it teaches you how to think and to read and to write. And the worst part is that people ask you whacked out questions. If you don't have the answer, you're a dummy.
Yeah.
So they'll say like, you know, can you make a right on red in Arizona? I have no idea. Well, I thought you knew. You went to law school. I was out that day, lady.
I get that. I think that lawyers have I ask you all kinds of ridiculous things, and you keep reminding me like that's not your area of expertise. And I have
like, it's like going to your general practitioner and asking them like about cataract. I mean, he knows a little bit about
right,
cataract.
Exactly.
But you would never say your general practitioner, you're a lousy doctor because you can't take off my cataract. Right. Oh, he was so good. He sent me to this eye specialist. Yeah. He was so, thank you, doctor. But they ask a lawyer, most esoteric, off the wall, or you'll disagree with them. You want to know how you get people angry as a lawyer? They'll tell you something and you'll say, either I don't think you have a case, or I don't think you're right, or something. You give them the answer they don't want to hear. And then you're the worst lawyer in the world. But if you tell them what they want to hear, especially Italian people, they corner the market on this. But if you tell them that they're right, and you tell them that what they want to hear, then he's the best. He's a smart.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah. Everybody wants backup for their case. And I think that for our community, that pathway, right, the legal practice, law school, I think it's increasingly become a real track for Italian Americans. And you think about, you know, back in the day, how hard it was for like a Mario Cuomo to come out of law school and even get a job at major law firms. And here we are, and we have significant representation in the legal practice. And our guests today are representatives of an organization that for over 40 years has been bringing Italian Americans together from the legal practice in order to not only preserve the heritage and create an environment of conviviality and confraternity in who we are, but really also to tackle these kind of issues, to create mentorship, to create opportunities and scholarships. So I'm very happy to have two representatives of the National Italian American Bar Association with us today. We have Christina Carabetta, and we have Fran Donnarumma, and Fran is the president of the National Italian American Bar Association and a longtime friend through the National Italian American Foundation. So, Christina, it's a pleasure to meet you, and Fran, it's good to see you again.
Yeah, it's really great to see you, and Patrick, I've over the years, I've run across your paths, and it's usually just a good laugh with Patrick and John. Thanks for having me and Christina. I think you'll learn from Christina, we're real proud of our association. It was actually formed in Greenwich Village somewhere about 40 years ago, and it's survived to this point. And then with Christina as our chairperson of the board and me as president, with a great board, we're sort of moving it along in some cool directions, I think.
Christina, wasn't aware you were the chairman of the board. I'm sorry. I apologize for that.
Thank you.
I didn't know how the board was organized.
Wasn't that Frank Sinatra's title? That's pretty impressive.
That's very true. Yeah, that's very true. How long have you served in that position?
I was sworn into that position, what was it, Fran, in 2000?
A year ago.
Yes.
Our first meeting coming out of COVID. We located it in Connecticut, selfishly a little bit for Christina and me, both Connecticut residents. But we held it at the very first law school, predated Yale and Harvard law schools by decades, was in Litchfield, Connecticut, cute, adorable colonial town. It was called the Tapping Reeve Law School. And we thought that would be a good way to come out of COVID. And our board has about 38 members. For a long time, they were male almost entirely, and there wasn't a lot of turnover. In the last decade, there's been a lot of movement in our board, which doesn't have so many young people among them, enjoyed so much working with Christina as one of our newer board members, and in an effort to really display who we want to be, building on top of what we've done for a lot of years, we nominated and elected Christina, who's young to almost all of us, but part of a young group of lawyers who are, inheriting the board. And we're delighted to have her serve, and Rita serve as our chairperson.
So, Christina, this is not like, this is an Italian-American show, right? So I can talk in ways that might not seem terribly correct in other venues. Like, it's no question that we have a community that tends to be a little bit gerontocratous.
That's a great word, gerontocratous.
I learned it many, many years ago in an article about Italy. So this should say everything to you. But yeah, we tend to be very, gerontocratous, the opposite of ageist, right? Mm-hmm. And we also tend to sort of have this, I don't want to say antiquated, we sort of have some holdover separation of the roles of men and women in these kind of organizations. A lot of the clubs still have ladies auxiliaries and things like that. And what is it, first and foremost, for a young Italian-American woman to be the chair of an organization like this? And secondly, as a young Italian-American, what's the appeal for our generation to participate in organizations like this, particularly in a professional setting like NIABA?
Sure. Well, I just want to say first, thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here. Thank you, Fran, for letting me accompany you on this. So to answer your first question, what is it like as a young Italian-American woman to be part of this organization? So I definitely understand what you're saying, and I've encountered those scenarios before. But I will say, during my first official board meeting with NIABA, I wasn't even a member at the time or a part of the board. When I walked into the room, I felt like a sense of family. So the situations that I've encountered in the past and any sort of preconceived notions that I had in my head just went out the window. Everyone was so nice and welcoming, and it really felt like a family. So that's what got me involved. In law school, I would say I was kind of like a serial bar member. I tried to join as many bar organizations as I could, for different exposure connections, and they were fine. Like, I didn't have any terrible encounters, but when I joined NIABA when I first went to the NIABA meeting is when I really got a sense of family. Like, I walked into a room, mostly older men, and I instantly felt like I was in, my living room with my uncles. Like, it probably helped that they were serving pasta.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
There was food. I'm like, this is wonderful. But everyone was just so nice and so welcoming and encouraging. And they really wanted my involvement, listened to everything that I had to say. So I really felt like heard and noticed. That was important. So that, notion of like ageism or, that women don't belong here was not felt at all.
If I could follow up, I have joined the organization. And my brother, who is an attorney, has also joined the organization. My cranky brother. And my brother, who takes care of government relations for NIAF, had the pleasure of attending your event in St. Louis this summer. Am I correct?
Yes.
He had a blast. My cranky brother had a blast and said, we have, and I always intended to, it's always on your to-do list. And my brother had such a good time hanging out with the NIABA crowd in St. Louis. So that is why this is a call to all the Italian-American lawyers out there. Join NIABA, because this crowd is fun. Because there's so many annoying people in the legal profession. There's so many people you just can't stand being around. So, and some of them mean well. They don't realize they're obnoxious and annoying, right? That's not intentional. They just that's who they are. But with NIABA, it's a fun, cool crowd. I hear that's where the cool kids are hanging now.
We are the cool kids.
And this is not a paid advertisement. This is coming from my brother. And John, it's hard to get a compliment out of my brother.
Yes, Anthony's discerning.
Yes, discerning. That's a good way to put it.
We had a great time with Anthony.
He's a great time when he wants to be. Yeah, he definitely is.
Thank you. No further questions, Your Honor. When
I'll
he
leave it
wants
at that.
To be.
I'll leave it at that. But I will say, you know, that feeling of family, that's exactly how I felt when I got to NIAF at 28 years old. And many, many times I'd have disagreements, you know, in terms, not unpleasant, but, you know, strategic disagreements with a board made up primarily of older people. And we'd be talking about where the organization was going to go. And I always reminded myself, I was on a flight with one of the board members once, and we were talking about my life, talking about my girlfriend at the time, now my wife, and what my plans were. And it dawned on me that, you know, that may happen occasionally if I had been the executive director of the American Heart Association. But it happened with almost all of them, at least those board members that I got to spend a good amount of time with, when I was at NIAF, because it is a family, right? I mean, this is the model we have for our heritage. And, you know, you share so much culture and understanding and values and experiences, and there's that unspoken language between people. So it does. It does become very familial, and there's great strengths to that. There's also some hiccups, but it's a big part of why I think participation in these organizations is so appealing. You know, if it is an organization that is a draw to younger lawyers, what is it doing now versus at its foundation? Fran, what was the initial intent for the organization, and what is it involved into and become?
Yeah. You know, in my look back, you know, in all respect to those who preceded us, you know, in leadership, if you will, it was formed with the notion, a bold notion, that there was no national organization for lawyers. And so it was formed and declared itself as a national organization. And I think immediately that rubbed wrong the existing, what I'll call regional Italian lawyer associations. Christina and I and a large group of us were just in Chicago in October, where the Chicago Justinian Society celebrated its 100th anniversary. So, you know, that society began really when Italian lawyers were lucky to get into a law school, get out of a law school, and then to get a job. And so a lot of what our people have, you know, gotten beyond, many of them have gotten beyond, is gone from, you know, 100 years ago. But when NIABA was formed, the intention was to create a national organization that could do other things than the regional ones, which were very much based on helping literally your lawyer friend down the street of Italian heritage to get a job, to perform in court, to not be beaten up, you know, figuratively by the establishment lawyers. So NIABA moved along and had a sometimes rocky road with the local organizations. There's been a whole new shift in the paradigm about 10 years ago, where we are, and everything I do with any of our other about 20 or so regional organizations across the U.S., I precede every remark that I make or every email that we, NIABA, as one among equals with our brother sister organizations, just happens to have a different footprint, and that we're looking to accomplish things not in competition by any means, but rather, you know, for the benefit of all. We consider all of those lawyers across the country who belong to those regional organizations to be really part of our constituency. Just at the last meeting in St. Louis, we actually changed our bylaws to no longer require dues. I mean, that's a lot of what we live on are the dues of our members. But we decided that, you know, we're not looking to push, we're only looking to welcome. So if there's a lawyer who doesn't want to pay the $50 dues, we don't expect there will be many, they don't have to. And so we're blowing open our exposure, if you will. And technology has helped an awful lot. During the last year, we've entered into a pact, I'll call it, with the Australian Italian Lawyers Association, right? So efforts had been made before, you know, 15 or so years ago, but the technology just didn't support it. So during COVID, it was particularly a great time. And for the first time now, we're formalizing it. So we'll start to have some exchanges and seminars. We had each country celebrated the 100th anniversary of women's suffrage at the same time, just by coincidence. And we had a beautiful a webinar, I guess you'd call it, with a judge, Elizabeth Bizzuto in the U.S. addressing it, and then another speaker of equal talent in Australia. And that was nice. And that was, it's a little symbolic in terms of the numbers of lawyers involved. But most recently, just coming to fruition in October, we've entered into a pact with something called the Unioni Crint Italiane. And quite simply, in Italy, there's mandatory bar association membership. So if you take the bar exam and you live in Milan, once you pass the bar exam, you must be a member of the Milan Bar Association. And there are 150 different associations throughout Italy. So those associations are formalizing a group that I refer to, the acronym is CRINT. And it's all based on their interest in international exchange. Now, obviously, with the EU, that's a whole lot of stuff that they're doing that we're not accustomed to doing as US lawyers. But as both you, John and Patrick, know, there's a highway of commerce that goes on. There's a highway of fashion and everything else between Italy and the US. And we were delighted to be noted as the direct and primary vehicle for Italian lawyers to communicate to the US. So already 53 of those bar associations in Italy have formally signed on. So we're on the verge of or just creating exchange with literally a couple of 100,000 of Italian lawyers. And we're connecting them with US Italian heritage lawyers.
Let me ask you a question. With your relationship now with Italy, with your relationship with Australia that also follows the Anglo, I guess we'd say Anglo-Australian, tradition of law.
Yeah.
Have you secured, I would say, permissions or understandings with each, with either of those groups for us to put on the outfits, the hats?
Like,
is there like a reciprocity? Can I go to Australia? I'm assuming Australia's got the outfits because, you know, the crown, the queen, they're still prosecuting in the name of Regina, the queen. You know, I would like to show up in a Sydney courtroom and, Adelaide, whatever those, Canberra, all those places with the outfit. Or Italy. Italy be even better because Italy, they got, the English one is kind of like, what's the word I'm looking for? It's regal. But the Italian one has gold all over, tassels, pom-pom. Fran, could you put this, if you don't have it, I want this as a new member. I want this on the to-do list.
Well, I'll tell you, it's serendipitous that we meet today because, I mean, we've been looking for just the right person to be anointed for that role, Patrick. And I know you're young enough that you're the look of the future.
Oh boy.
So we'll work on that though. We'll get some costumes for you to try.
Yeah. The hats. I want the hat with the pom-pom, like, you know, Bonfi used to wear.
Yeah.
They would have the San Remo festival. They used to have that show after the contest.
I know you speak Italian, right?
So, yeah. I could Napoli down court, I'll do fine. Italian court, I might do so.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
But I'm very excited about this. But, you know, all kidding aside, the value of what your organization does, I was shocked. I was in, it must have been about 2008, 2010. I was at an Italian-American event in Providence, Rhode Island. And an Italian-American attorney told me, who entered the Rhode Island bar, it was like 1980 or 1981. The date stuck in my mind. He had like stellar academic credentials. He applied for a job at a very waspy Rhode Island firm in Providence. And he was told that his last name would be a barrier because that he had like a very Italian name, like, you know, and that basically the kind of clients they have wouldn't feel that they were getting a return on their dollar with someone with an Italian name. I was stunned that was going on in 1980, 1981, that late in the game, we still went through that.
Well, you know, there's actually one of our new board members is Maria Chiara Parisi, who's a lawyer in San Francisco, who works for a think tank in education. And she's taken on a task and she's working it up now. Actually, we're participating with the Calandria Institute, Dr. Tamburi and his group. We're doing now a study of discrimination. And you know, we don't have conclusions, but the study is underway now on discrimination in hiring, in particularly large law firms and some other settings, of Italian Americans. You know, some of us grew up in communities, you know, like mine in Connecticut, with lots of Italian people. So I didn't necessarily feel, you know, discriminated against or put upon because I was in an environment where we're surrounded by Italian Americans or Italians as well. But obviously that's not the case elsewhere. So we're looking forward to Chiara, who's a board member, to come up with some interesting findings. And then we'll, you know, depending on the actual findings, we expect to be very aggressive on that, because many feel like the, you know, the era of discrimination has gone by. Your story is very telling, and we're working on that still, and hope to have some, you know, insight and figures coming up over the next few months.
John, can I do a shout out?
Yeah,
just a moment of historical record. The first two Italian American lawyers in the state of New Jersey, their parents were from San Mango Cilento. They were in Jersey City.
Get out of here.
Yes, they were the Masano brothers.
Is that right?
We know that for a fact because there was a book published in New Jersey in 1951 and 1952. It was like a who's who of accomplished Italian Americans. And, you know, San Mango was so small. Those Masanos, they're related to me by marriage. If they're by blood, it's far back. But their mother was like a sister. Their father, rather. My great-grandfather's sister-in-law's brother was their father. And yeah, they were born in the 1870s, I want to say, late 1860s, 1870s. They're probably the first Sandomanghese family that we know that were in Jersey City. And the two brothers became attorneys. And that was recorded in that book that they were the first two Italian-American attorneys in the state of New Jersey. And they were Sandomanghese in Jersey City,
yeah.
For the record.
It's so funny you say that, because I was reading through the notes that Fran sent over for us in terms of note prep and stuff, and it was pointed out that the first Italian-American to graduate from any law school in the country was William Francis Taliaferro in 1811. And one of the things I always find really fascinating about our immigration trajectory is, you know, we get the challenge, I guess, but also the joy of trying to identify those firsts, you know, and figuring out who can, because the names obviously stick out, and there was just so few. So it's always fascinating to me to look through these kind of things and figure out who was the first Italian American to do X or Y or whatever it is. But, you know, it speaks to the lack of representation. And look, every ethnic group that came at different points have climbed that ladder towards the professions. That's no shock. It's part of the system, right? You don't get off the boat and get accepted into law school. It takes time and it takes some integration into the country. But it's interesting to me because we have a lot of these conversations now, and I think a good portion of our audience is so ingrained in the American way of life and is multiple generations removed from the immigrant experience. And even those Italians that are coming now, they come as these sort of, you know, EU European citizens in all kinds of professional fields. They don't necessarily come in the same huddled masses as our ancestors. But oftentimes we have these conversations with professional Italian Americans who commit themselves to these kind of organizations because they do feel there are still challenges, even if they're not based on any kind of resistance. Christina, I know you guys do scholarships and grants and things like that. What can a young lawyer or young law student that might need some support find at NIABA?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So we recently just formed the NIABA Law School Council, which I'm partnering with other law students across the country to create a support group specifically for law students that really provides mentorship, resources, different networking opportunities. So for example, for me, one of the really defining moments of being a NIABA member was when I first joined fresh out of law school. I was working in-house for a property management company. There wasn't really a solid legal team. I was the only lawyer. I also started my own firm, so I was a solo. So I didn't really have anyone to directly collaborate with. And when I had different issues or wanted to talk through a legal problem with someone, I sent out an email to the board. And within 10 minutes, I had all different types of responses, people calling my phone, wanting to work through these issues with me. So the fact that you can just literally pick up the phone or send an email and get connected to some really great people, notable, accomplished, and just have those answers and that support is, I think, something that you really don't get anywhere else. You may, you know, in an office setting, but it's so much more than that because they go above and beyond with wanting to help you. And you really feel like you're part of this bigger team and Like I mentioned before, like bigger family, I refer to the board as my family-in-law.
When you have events, how much of where you have events and when they take place is based on where you're going to eat? Is that an anchoring?
Totally.
Because there's a group of lawyers in New Jersey that Mayor Joe Alessi gets together, and it's all about where we're going to go eat. And I love that concept. Is that part of your worldview? Where we're going to go eat? I hope so.
Yeah, where we're going to go eat, and then where we're going to order food from to bring to the meeting. So,
of course.
Because if you have I'll go to Connecticut for a meeting if the food is good. If the food's like, you know,
it's not like it's North Dakota.
If I know I'm going to eat well, I'll take the 2 hours up there. I'll go all the way up where I don't care because I'll travel for food. But, you know,
that's another Italian lawyer thing you always told me about was because, I mean, you practiced in an Italian community, right? And
oh, my God. That's a trauma.
You got paid in food a lot of the time, didn't you?
I did well from Italian because I could do wills and I could do stuff for Italian people who spoke either broken English or little English or Italian. And yes, they always try to temper the bill with baskets and baskets of food. You get cases. I had one guy who wanted to pay. He had, I don't want to reveal the business he had. He had a food business and he was going to pay. He was always looking to barter like X amount of product. I'm like, just give me cash. No. I don't know. Ethically, I don't know how much I could share, but it was always very entertaining interactions because that's very old country. It's always a barter. You know, how many chickens is this closing going to cost me? I can't, what am I going to put chickens? Like, how many cases? My wine is the best. I give you my wine. 85 a case of mine. No, I don't want. I want cash. But that.
I always say when the first time I was one of the first times I was at my wife's house. My father-in-law is a doctor from Italy, and he practices in a predominantly Italian community. So most of his patients are Italian American or Italian. And my mother-in-law was away, and I was waiting for my wife. And this old woman rang the bell. I went down to answer it, and she dropped off two huge trays of manicotti that she made. And she said, "These are for dottore. You don't touch these." You know, I couldn't eat them. And I'm convinced they were payment for her, you know, medical checkup. And, you know.
See, but Italians like doctors better than lawyers.
Oh, sure.
Because the doctor keeps you alive. the lawyer's like garlic around your neck. He's like the guy, he's like the red horn that keeps the maloic away. Because they're going to sue somebody over a house, a cousin over something, or a neighbor, or a business gone bad. The Italian client loves to draw you into the family drama. I'm going to draw you in. And I wish if I could, if I'm going to die one day, I'm going to write all my stories down, all my Italian lawyer stories down, and then I'll be gone. I don't care. You could read them all out. I could have done a movie. You know that, John. I could have done some of them.
Oh, easy. Easy.
Italians fighting other Italians. There's nothing like it. Two Italians suing each other. That's like, am I right or wrong, guys? Is that not like Christmas? It's all the drama. And then when you win, it's like the Olympics. It's like, you know, when they jump like how they would jump up and down with the gold medal. Because we're people based on principle.
That's true. Yeah. That's very true. Christina mentioned the law school associations. As a matter of fact, Pat and I and Anthony and some of our other confratelli from the Constantinian Order, we did a lecture at the Ave Maria Law School, and they had a small group of students who were in an institute that we were participating with, and one of them approached us at the end and said, you know, I'm a big listener to the podcast, and I really enjoy it. And she and some students there at the school actually started a chapter of this NIABA on campus initiative. And I thought that was so exciting, really, to see, you know, it's hard to start these groups on campus, and a lot of Italian groups try to do that in partnership, but to see young people on the cusp of these legal careers understanding the value of associating with one another on campus and then professionally. You know, Christina, when you pointed out, you started out in-house and then in a solo practice, and, you know, I know a lot of the lawyers in my life, my family, always operated in, you know, solo or small partnerships. Of course, there's plenty that I know at big firms or Italian American, but do either of you have any sense, and is there any kind of statistic that we can lean on? Is there a majority in that? Are the majority of Italian American lawyers practicing solo, practicing in small? Like, do we know that? Can we know that?
I don't know that. Part of what Chiara is doing, though, is in her survey, is trying to figure that out. We don't know. Our board historically had, you know, smaller firm people. But we've been growing into some board members from large law firms. And that's really helpful because that's where we try to schedule our board meetings. We in Chicago, Holland and Knight is all over the U.S. Ken Gennaro from Chicago is a partner and board member. But, you know, we meet at Holland and Knight offices around the country. Greensfelder is where we met in which doesn't have an Italian sound to it. Greensfelder is, I think, 160 lawyer firm in St. Louis, and an Italian partner, Vincent Garozzo, hosted us there. When we arrived for that board meeting, and one of our board members, Paul, whom you both know, Paul Finizio from Florida, got some food from an Italian deli and brought it up. And so that's sort of a large law firm. You can imagine if you don't know the tenor of how things are there, and they, of course, have an office manager, who's diligent and not of Italian heritage. There's a kitchen for the staff. They have infirm dining and all that. And so she came in and was concerned about our technical equipment and stuff. And Paul's first and only question to her is, can you get us the olive oil from the kitchen? And she's like, she goes, olive oil. It was like the strangest thing in the world. And that became, emblematic of what it's like in some of those, non-Italian settings. But more telling about our organization is that once he was convinced that there was no olive oil there, he goes, I'll be back. I got to go to the hotel. He goes, I've got some in my suitcase. So
I know Paul well. I'm not surprised at all that he had olive oil in his
suitcase. And he goes, you really got to have it with you. But, we're enjoying spreading into, Wilmer and Snell has got about 600 lawyers across the West. And that's where a young Italian partner, Ben Nucci, hosted us there. So we're finding, greater opportunities just because a lot of the large law firms have great capacities. And we also draw, NIABA draws people not of, genetically Italian heritage as well. There's an African-American lawyer from Connecticut who was a Supreme Court justice, which in Connecticut is the highest court. And he's a wonderful and gifted and participating member. With this group in Italy, the CRINT group, our first webinar, which be with thousands of attendees, is lining up for July 7th, is an expert, probably in my view, the best, the highest regarded whistleblower lawyer in the United States, Texas based from Houston. And his name is Joel Androffi. He's not of Italian heritage. He's a Jewish Eastern European heritage. But a lot of people are drawn to our group for the things that Christina was talking about and you guys are talking about as well. It's just so welcoming. It is food centric. And maybe that's the device. Maybe a different culture has some other device, but no doubt about it that food is seductive to a lot of people of Italian heritage, and it's disarming as well, right? As soon as somebody meets us, usually for the first time when we're on the road, our 3-day board meetings are full of. If I could use a Grateful Dead analogy better, but the Grateful Dead have people traveling around the country all the time, right? Joining and being together, and that's what we're like. We've got friends, relatives, who's ever from the area coming along. And we meet usually a Thursday night start at an Italian restaurant. And right away, it fast tracks the relationship so quickly. And then the next day you're, at a meeting eating and dinner and 3 dinners in a row. And my favorite thing growing up, maybe age reflective, it was hanging around. What does that mean? I guess it depends on where you were. But, for me, it was hanging around, was going to a corner drugstore. And, in January, we'd be outside when it closed, hanging around when, it was like 7 degrees, and you'd still be just doing the very same thing. But really, it's all conversation-based and growth-based and relationship-based. And that's really what we sell. We sell a feeling, and we're not getting paid for it, but we sell a feeling, and that's what draws lawyers to us. Sometimes, and it's maybe unfair, I suggest to someone, when you come to a meeting, you're going to know whether this is for you or not. And more often than not, they do know, and they just come away as committed to NIABA as anyone could possibly be. So we have a whole load of fun. We do some diverse things. I don't know if you realize that perhaps Christina would be able to outfit Patrick as our model for the European look. But Christina is also, she's a committed lawyer with quite a diverse practice. But she's also has a little side gig that's pretty interesting.
A pocketbook queen.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I still say pocketbook and people. Can I say that anymore? Is that dated now? I gotta say purse or bag.
There you go.
But you are the queen. Am I correct?
Yeah.
You are a designer. You are a pocketbook creator. Tell us.
Yeah, it's very new, but I am. Yeah. So I designed a purse, or I like to call it a professional handbag, because it's not a briefcase and it's not a purse, but it's functional enough where women can fit all of their work and personal needs in the same bag. And I got the idea from being a lawyer in my profession. There wasn't anything really elegant or sophisticated enough that I could fit everything in. There was very masculine handbags, or briefcases, I should say, masculine briefcases, or I had one with like the wheels, but it just wasn't working out. So I was able to collaborate with my uncle who does leather tooling, and we made a prototype. And with my connections from Niaba, I was able to locate Italian manufacturers and get the bag manufactured in Italy. So it's 100% Italian source, Italian made.
Bravo. How much more Italian is that story? We couldn't have scripted it.
No, I was going to say, that's amazing.
She wants a fashionable ladies professional bag. She calls her uncle, who's a master leather worker. She has an Italian creativity, and then she gets a lot of people on board, and they make the bag in Italy. How do we tell people about your bags?
Yeah, you got to send us a link.
Yeah, our website, shopbetabag.com.
Yeah, you got to send that to us, and we'll put it on the show page.
That's a
great takeaway. We love supporting Italian-American businesses, and even better when they're manufactured in Italy. And, you know, that's so indicative of everything that's right about where our community is and where it's going, because, you know, when you guys were explaining before this partnership with the Italian Unione and their bar associations, you know, in a global world, I've always felt that Italy oftentimes fails to look at our community and others as a functional diaspora and a professional diaspora. And, you know, I've had these conversations with major Italian manufacturers and brands and things like that. And it's interesting to see perhaps in the law profession, maybe we'll have the prototype of how this sort of new global diasporic interaction can work and flourish for our community, because, you know, a lot of people are addressing global issues now. You know, it's not as simple as sort of I practice on Main Street and I'm, you know, I know the parking rules here in town. I mean, there's global issues that come up everywhere, multinational issues, and that advantage between Italy and the United States and our community as the bridge, that's kind of what it should be in all fields at this point. So, you know, auguri to you guys for getting that done, and hopefully it's proving to be productive.
New episodes of Old Favorites are on Mediaset Italia this May. A new season of Freedom will take you on brand new adventures, amazing you with the mysteries of history and nature, airing Wednesday nights. Test your smarts with the primetime edition of popular quiz show Avanti Un Altro every Thursday night with host Paolo Bonolis. And don't forget to catch the end of this round of Amici on May 15th and the Best of Edition on May 22nd. Plus new episodes of Uomini e Donne, Forum, Cotto e Mangiato, Verissimo, and more. Mediaset Italia brings you the best television entertainment from Italian channels Canale 5, Italia 1, and Rete 4. So you'll never miss a moment from Italy. Call your local television provider and ask about Mediaset Italia today.
If I could interject, John, something that Fran had touched on earlier. My friend always, Eric Lavin, always remarks that I call it the off-the-boat Italian crowd, and I say that affectionately, always refers to me as avvocato or signor avvocato. They'll never, ever call me by my first name. Avvocato. He goes, I'm a professor. Why don't they call me professore? He goes, they call me Eric, but they call you avvocato. I said, because they never know when they're going to need that favor. Every Italian will always ask you for a business card because they never know. It's like a PBA card, right? They pull it out. Something happens. Even if I can't help, I send them to someone else. And the reason I go to that is that I think that Fran brought up such a great point that Italian Americans in the legal profession, on the most part, I feel they excel at their bedside manner. And I think that people don't realize that I've seen some lawyers, they're brilliant people. I mean, they've written every academic article imaginable. but they can't communicate with their client and they can't sympathize or empathize with their client, right? And there's a lack there, but that's where Italians really excel, being able to communicate. And, you know, I've seen so many attorneys that have all this academic bells and whistles, but they can't communicate with their blue collar client. They can't communicate with an immigrant client. There's a chasm there. And I think that where Italian Americans can compensate is that they can, we're a people of feeling. So we can feel, right? We can feel your pain. We can sympathize with your pain. You know, I heard a law school, a dean in a law school one time made a comment disparaging attorneys that do closings and close mortgages. And they said, well, I'm not going to name the law school. We don't want that kind of lawyer, right? Because it doesn't help on our prestige. And I was like, that's where you want your best and your brightest, because you want them where people need them, right? You need good lawyers everywhere. You need good lawyers in counsel for a Fortune 500 company. You need lawyers at a top law firm on Park Avenue. And you need the guy down the block who's going to be able to help that family that got into a horrible car accident or have a medical malpractice situation. Or, you know, there's a dispute with a will and maybe a family member who's the executor is not doing the right thing. There's so many reasons and places that you need a good attorney. And everybody deserves a good attorney, right? And I think that that's, when I heard that comment, I thought to myself, there was a non-Italian American law school dean. I don't, you know, of course we've assimilated enough and, you know, there's jerks in Italy too. But I think that our people would be less inclined to make such a cold and condescending comment. And with that being said, I want to ask Fran, because Fran, I've heard you say it before. People ask, why do Italian Americans need their own lawyers association? And with that being said, because I've heard your story before, what drew you in to the organization?
Well, yeah, I can tell you in short form, wonderful colleague back in 1992 in Connecticut, my little world, formed the Connecticut Italian American Bar Association, invited all the area lawyers. And I respectfully declined. I thought it was an awful idea. I thought it was, you know, just terrible, because I had grown up in the era where, you know, pluralism and integration was what it was all about. So I didn't participate. Come forward to about 12 years ago, and he then had become a judge. Rich Morano is his name, and he called me and he said, "Franny, you know, the organization had you know, dragged a little and had it wasn't vibrant any longer," and asked me to restart it. And at that time, I just was moved because he asked me, which is a great life lesson, right? You can ask for almost anything you want, and the mere asking will get you what you want almost always. I've learned. But that aside, I said, sure, Rich, I'm going to do it. And so frankly, the organization was really on life support. So what I did is invite about 30 lawyers who I knew in Connecticut to a dinner, and, you know, got their interest. And as a judge, because he was a judge, I took his advice. He goes, Fanny, he goes, don't worry about the bylaws. Don't worry about the rules. Just do it. So I said, you know, will you serve on the board of directors? And everybody, of course, because they were captive at a nice dinner, said yes. So we suddenly had a 30-person board to start working with in Connecticut again and refreshing this. And it went forward. And what we did was, in one of the Connecticut large firms, the next meeting, we're going to have a board meeting. Everybody brought, it was like a Christmas Eve, having friends and relatives come to your house. We were in a stuffy large law firm with a gigantic table, conference room, and everybody just brought, you know, every form of salumi, you know, cheeses, you name it, they brought it. It was just thrilling, and we got up and really raced. So I confess that my participation in NIABA and, you know, earlier in the Connecticut thing, is really an accident, okay? I mean, I have the beautiful accident of having, you know, genetically been born into a family with Italian ancestry. And I'll be frank, if I were of a different nationality, I hope and think I would embrace this same thing. It just happens to be that I'm Italian, that there is virtue.
You won the lottery.
Yeah, I did. But it's the virtue of bringing together people with this shortcut opportunity to connect. It's the accident of having the same culture, the same cuisine, the same history, the same, you know, they're different people, right? But they're the same uncle, whoever, Vincenzo, Uncle Tony, you know, we all have the same relatives. They just have different names and maybe slightly different photographs. But this accident of our birth and our heritage makes it so easy. It compresses time unlike anything else. So that's what I've learned is really what this is about, is that bringing together people. And what was important in my little Connecticut startup experience was that in the, and I use it, it's an outdated word now. You said it's a safe place to speak freely and maybe sometimes with outdated words. But, you know, there was this, you know, like what I call the Straight Bar Association, the, you know, or maybe you call it the established, the Connecticut Bar Association, the Illinois Bar Association. They all existed. And they were the only act in town before technology. They were the sole source of seminars of building your career within a state or some other region. But the establishment bar associations were not hospitable, and certainly not hospitable to Italian heritage people. So when I brought together the 30 people in Connecticut, and they instantly became our board, most of them never had the opportunity, maybe because they were timid or they had been denied, but they never had the opportunity of participating in the Straight Bar Association. So you had super talented people never being asked to do something of significance like this, and either having been denied or institutionally denied, if you will, and feeling the intangible of discrimination over the years. But coming together in these so-called affinity bar associations really is mind-blowing, and I don't overstate it, to suddenly be part of something and to be a significant part of something and to be able to take on causes, be it, you know, the Columbus-related causes, which many people are enthusiastic about, anti-discrimination, and then the more positive causes that, you know, in terms of getting together with Italian lawyers, Australian lawyers. We're still trying to break in with British. There's a British Italian Bar Association, and they don't answer the phone or call me back.
That is where we're getting the outfits from. They even got the wigs. Run, Franny, run. That's the people.
But I've gone a little too much, but it's really, that's it all comes down to this intangible. And in fact, in St. Louis, I was commenting that, you know, the integration, let's say, through cross marriage, right, sounds very primitive, a conversation from 80 years ago. But I mean, as many people of Italian heritage marry other people of other heritages and get to enjoy some beautiful other cuisines and all that, you know, there's a concern and worry, and it's reflected in a lot of Italian heritage organizations that the membership is dropping. But the reality is this, that even, if someone can't say, all four of my grandparents, are from Italy, my generation can say that, right? You're all three, John and Patrick and Christina, you're all younger and you probably can't say that. And then your kids are going to even be less able to say that. But what I've read up on a little bit, and I truly believe, and if I read it wrong, I truly believe with what I'll say, is that even after there's not the genetic or the blood relationship from Italy that Italian heritage people have here, there's still something more, and I don't have the language that an anthropologist may have, that there's still a reality that there is connection.
Oh, sure.
It's not necessarily blood. It's not necessarily DNA, but just by our ancestors, and the thread of connection is real. And so I'm not fearful of the future. I don't think that Italian heritage organizations will disappear, or that our connection to Italy here in the U.S. will disappear. In fact, I'm more enthusiastic about it than ever. And I think it can flourish. It may be because Italy and the people of Italy have so much to offer to us. And I do perceive that Italians are understanding, if they didn't before, that this is, right to today, despite the pessimism throughout the United States on every level, people outside of this country still look to the United States as a good and obvious place to grow and to succeed. So I feel good about it, even though our heritage won't be so closely, dynamically, you know, four grandparents deep. It'll be something different.
Yeah, I've from my earliest days as a community activist. I am an anthropologist by education, so I've always felt...
Is that what we are, Italian community activists?
I don't know. Organizing? I don't know. I mean, when I was at NIAF, that was the best way to describe it, right? As a nonprofit executive, but really, you're a community activist.
I like brand that. Brand us that. I like that.
Put it on the card. Yeah, as I say, professional Italian American, whatever that means.
Professional Italian American, I don't like. I like Italian community activist. It sounds active. It's more active than passive.
I put that on as a passive person, but I've always felt that argument that people are marrying out, it's silly, because I got to encounter so many people who had very little actual genetic code that came from Italy, but who still were very attached to their Italian heritage, and if not having grown up that way, were desirous of discovering it and getting to learn more. And I love that. I mean, my wife and I are both 100% Italian. Our little daughter, I was thinking about this the other day. My wife's brother also married an Italian girl. So on her family, it's a little bit different. But in my family, which has been here for generations, I think I have a couple of single cousins. We can't, you know, we don't know what their life will bring. But of all the great-grandkids that exist on both sides of my family right now, my daughter's the only one who will be able to say all my ancestry comes from Italy. And that's amazing to think that after thousands of years, that's where we've gone. But at the same time,
I don't agree with that, though.
No, I don't think it's bad. I don't think she'll be the only one who participates.
Yeah, but I don't think she's not all Italian. She's Greek and Phoenician.
Yeah, exactly.
No, but I mean, like, the reason I say it is that Italy was a melting pot of, you know, exactly. the Normans came to Italy and became Italian.
Yeah.
We didn't become Norwegian.
But that's my point.
We're not even looked fish.
Thank God.
Roger the Norman there, Rogero.
Yeah, Rogero.
He went to Sicily. He's like, I'm not going back to Viking land.
No, but I mean, that's my point exactly. We've always been a hodgepodge culture.
But that's our power. People came and they wanted to be us.
Yeah, exactly.
They come to Franny and Christine. Like, I'm not Italian, but I want to join your bar association because you eat better and you're more fun. What do we have to fear?
Yeah, we have nothing to fear.
We can only conquer the world.
That's right.
And we don't conquer like Russians and other countries with missiles and bombs. We conquer with pizzas and bottles of wine.
That's very true.
They're our missiles.
That's true.
That's why we're not really good at military. We're not really into like forcing you with tanks.
No.
You fall in love with us and you come to us. We don't need to go to you.
We have a very seductive culture. Really, really.
Yeah,
do.
John, you're hitting them out of the park. We're seductive. Italian-American activist seductive, right? That's
not seductive. Oh, gosh.
Is this a seductive podcast?
I was just going to say, I've had non-lawyers ask if they could join the National Italian-American Bar Association.
Exactly.
Lawyer organization.
Exactly.
We just love Italian culture. Can we join?
Yeah, that to me is the whole package, right? If people want to join, even if they're not professionally tied to the organization, that tells you everything about it. And as we wrap up here,
well, let me say something. Yeah, my brother brought that cranky pants brought to my attention.
Yeah,
my brother says very good. He'll be silent. People think it's like he's quiet. No, he's aloof. There's a difference, right? So Anthony talks when he feels like talking. I'll speak for 3 hours. Anthony will say two words and hit it out of the park. What I couldn't say in 3 hours.
Yeah.
What you guys need to do is have continuing legal education credits.
Go for that.
Because when you have to do in person in New Jersey, there's so many annoying people around you. I would love to do continuing legal education credits around other Italians.
Yeah.
So like the breaks, the foods are fun, right? You go to these other, the state-run stuff. It's like stale potato chips. I don't want that. What do they call it? Charcuterie. Yeah, charcuterie boards and CLs. I'll pay. I'm not cheap. I'll pay. But if I got to sit there for 4 hours, 8 hours, I forget, 24 hours in every 2 years in New Jersey, offer it, get New Jersey to get all the Faison states like New Jersey, Rhode Island, Ohio, let all their bars approve it. And then we'll all go one place and we'll eat for 2-3 days while these speakers ramble on. I'm like, so there, you'll sell out. There'll be a line around the door.
So September 19th, meet us in Napoli. Because you could get 12 credits on the 19, 20, and 21 in Naples, where we will all be, and love to have you be there.
That's why everybody, if you're a lawyer out there, get out the credit card. Some of you still have your confirmation money wrapped up. You have a rubber band around it. And I'm 1972, it's still there. Some of them still in the envelopes. Pay the dues, join the organization. This is a fun crowd. You don't want to go to ICA with all those annoying people. I know you don't. I don't like to go. Come join this organization. Who else is going to offer you continuing legal education credits in Naples on the Feast of San Gennaro?
That's very true.
That's not a lottery ticket. That's why we are here to evangelize.
I'm going to be one of those non-lawyers who asked to participate in that because I'm going to actually be working out of Italy for much of September. So I may rearrange my trip and see if I can just put on a suit and come along. And, you know, we won't tell anybody that I'm not a lawyer.
Just get the outfit, John. You got to bring me home the outfit if I can't go to school.
Yeah.
You got to do it, John. That'll be great. We'd love to have you.
I mean, how could you beat that? You can't beat that. But I'll even take the credits. Maybe I'll go back and go to law school. But, yeah, that's the appeal. I mean, it sounds like such an appealing organization to be in. I've been around you guys at different events and conferences. conferences and been able to see your organization get together at the NIAF Gala weekend, and it really is wonderful. So for those of you out there who may be lawyers yourself or have someone in your family or someone you love or a friend who is in the legal profession and could be interested in this amazing organization, we're going to put the link on our show page. But for those who are hearing this on other platforms, why don't you guys tell us what the website is, how they can find you, and how they can join up?
Sure. The website reflects our name, which is the National Italian American Bar Association. It's at niaba.org. And you can get there. You'll see some cool pictures, and you could register and make a contribution of only $50, and you'd be a member. You get plugged right in.
That's wonderful. I hope everybody really takes that call up, and it's great to be a part of something as wonderful as our heritage, and to be able to bring it into your profession is a real joy. So for those of you who can't be full-time Italian-Americans like Pat and I, here's a great alternative where you can...
activists. Change yeah. that. Probably
said Italian-American activist, right?
Full-time Italian-American
exactly.
activist. That sounds so much better.
You, too, need to be an activist Italian-American. So NIAB is a great way to do that. So, guys, thanks for being here. I very much look forward to seeing everybody in person, and hopefully it will be in Naples in September. For those of you out there, we hope you've enjoyed this conversation. Hope you're inclined to be activists and sign up. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
See that you're born in Italiano and your life will be great. See that you're born in Italiano and